The examples given cover a period of nearly 1,000 years, embracing the time when the Lord and the apostles lived. Josephus was born A.D. 37, and hence lived and wrote contemporaneously with the apostles. He was a native Jew and wrote in the Greek language and certainly understood the word as used by his people. As a scholar, he was inferior to no man of his day. He says, "Now my father Matthias was not only eminent on account of his nobility, but had a higher commendation on account of his righteousness, and was in great reputation in Jerusalem, the greatest city we have. I was myself brought up with my brother, whose name was Matthias, for he was my own brother by both father and mother. And I made mighty proficiency in the improvements of my learning, and appeared to have both a great memory and understanding. Moreover, when I was a child, and about 14 years of age, I was commended by all for the love I had to learning. On which account the high priests and principal men of the city came frequently to me together, in order to know my opinion about the accurate understanding of points of the law," etc. Again, Antiquities, Book 10, Chapter 11, Section 3, page 139. He says, "I am so bold as to say, now I have so completely perfected the work I proposed to myself to do, that no other person, whether he were a Jew or a foreigner, had he ever so great an inclination to it, could so accurately deliver these accounts to the Greeks as is done in these books. For those of my own nation freely acknowledge that I far exceed them in the learning belonging to the Jew. I have also taken a great deal of pains to obtain the learning of the Greeks and understand the elements of the Greek language, although I have so long accustomed myself to speak our own tongue that I cannot pronounce Greek with sufficient exactness," etc. Although these extracts were written by Josephus himself, the literary world awards him all the ability claimed in them, as the following paragraph will show. Josephus Flavius, a celebrated Jewish historian, was born at Jerusalem, 37 A.D. He was of both royal and sacerdotal lineage, being descended on the mother's side from the line of Asmonean princes, while his father Matthias officiated as priest in the first of the 24 courses. The careful education he received developed his brilliant faculties at an unusually early period, and his acquirements both in Hebrew and Greek literature, the two principal branches of his studies, soon drew public attention upon him. Chambers Encyclopedia. Josephus used the word baptizo in some of its forms 14 times, several examples of which we have given, and surely he knew the meaning his people attached to it. And had they used it in a sense different from him, it is likely it would have been mentioned by him somewhere. It is sometimes said that he used the word in the sense of drowning, but this is manifestly an error. The boy Aristobulus, of whom he speaks, was indeed drowned, but we know the fact because it is so stated, and not because of any such meaning in the word baptizo. Many persons admit that the word baptizo in classic Greek means to dip or immerse, but they insist that it has a different meaning in the New Testament. The reader will remember that the 70 authors already quoted defined the word in its scriptural application, and they say it means immersed when used to indicate baptism. And the examples given from the classics show that, with the Greek classic writers, it meant the same thing. Moses Stuart says that the Greek fathers and the Latin ones who were familiar with the Greek understood the usual import of the word baptizo would hardly seem to be capable of denial. That they might be confirmed in their view of the import of this word by common usage among the Greek classic authors, we have seen in the first part of this dissertation. Stuart, On Baptism, page 154. How could the fathers be confirmed in the fact that baptizo meant immerse by classical usage if their use of it differed from its use among the classics? Mr. Hewley, a distinguished Methodist debater of great learning and research, in his debate with President Braden, page 81, says, "I will show by examples from the classics that the classical usage agrees with the Hellenistic and patristic usage of the word." After giving some examples of its use on page 82, he says, "These examples show, by the usage of the word, that classical usage agrees exactly with the scriptural usage and also the usage of the fathers." When summing up his argument on page 157, he says, "I showed by a number of examples from the classics that classical usage agrees with scripture and patristic usage." Thus we have his testimony in three different places that the classic usage of baptizo differs not from scriptural and patristic usage. Such is his testimony, though different from some of his brethren. Dr. H. A. W. Meyer, in his manual on the Gospels of Mark and Luke, says, "The expression in Matthew 7 and verse 4 is not to be understood of the washing of hands, as interpreted by Lightfoot and Wettstein, but of the immersing, which the word always means in the classics and in the New Testament." Bailey's Manual, page 294. Thus, with Dr. Meyer, it means the same in both places. Dr. George Campbell says, "The word baptizein, both in sacred authors and classical, signifies to dip, to plunge, to immerse." Campbell, On Baptism, page 142. Dr. George Campbell, as a scholar and biblical critic, had no superior in his time, and he unites his testimony with the others given, and still others which might be given, in proving that baptizo means to dip or immerse in both sacred and classic usage. It is true, as shown by Schleusner, that the Greek classic writer sometimes used the word to indicate sinking, without regard to immersion, while in the scriptures it is used in the sense of dip, as in 2 Kings chapter 5, verse 14, which includes the idea of immersion. Hence, says Paul, "Buried with him in baptism, wherein also ye are risen with him." Colossians 2 and verse 12. But this is rather a difference in application than in primary import. Immersion is the leading idea in the classics as well as in the scriptures. But were we to admit a difference in the primary import of the word, unless it be shown to mean sprinkle and pour in the New Testament, the admission would not serve sprinklers any purpose. This is the point which they must prove. That dip, immerse, or some equivalent word is necessary to express the primary meaning of baptizo is admitted by all. But it is insisted that wash, wet, stain, dye, etc. are figurative meanings. And as washing, wetting, staining, and dyeing may be done by pouring or sprinkling, therefore baptism may be performed in either of these ways. Wash, wet, stain, dye, etc. cannot be real meanings, but are purely metonymical, that is, they are effects of the true or real meaning of the word. No two meanings can be given to the same word which are antagonistic to each other. Stains are removed by washing, and therefore the same word cannot literally mean both wash and stain. Washing may be the effect of immersing in clean water, while staining and dyeing may be done by immersing in impure or coloring fluids. Hence, these opposite meanings cannot be otherwise than metonymical, that is, they are effects produced by the real meaning, dipping or immersing. All these figurative meanings, so called, may be the effect of immersion, but they cannot all be the effect of sprinkling or pouring, for washing and dyeing are not done in either of these ways. Sprinkling a few drops of water on a filthy garment would not be likely to wash it well, nor would pouring a little water on one end of a garment be very apt to wash or cleanse the balance of it. And if it were a coloring fluid, it would not be a good process by which to dye a whole web to sprinkle or pour a little of the fluid on one end of it. But does the word baptizo ever mean to color or dye? We beg the attention of the reader to the following very appropriate remarks by Dr. Carson on this subject. He says, "The word bapto, from which is formed baptizo, signifies primarily to dip, and as a secondary meaning, obviously derived from the primary, it denotes to dye. Every occurrence of the word may be reduced to one or other of these acceptations." Carson, On Baptism, page 18. On page 19, he says, "There is a very obvious difference in the use of the words and a difference that materially affects the point at issue. This difference is, bapto is never used to denote the ordinance of baptism, and baptizo never signifies to dye. But the derivative is formed to modify the primary only, and in all the Greek language I assert that an instance is not to be found in which it has the secondary meaning of the primitive word. If this assertion is not correct, it will be easy for learned men to produce an example in contradiction. that bapto is never applied to the ordinance of baptism, anyone can verify who is able to look into the passages of the Greek Testament where the ordinance is spoken of. Now, if this observation is just, it overturns all those speculations that explain the word as applied to baptism by an allusion to dying. For the primitive word that has this secondary meaning is not applied to the ordinance, and the derivative word which is appointed to express it has not the secondary signification of dying. Bapto has two meanings. Baptizo, in the whole history of the Greek language, has but one. It not only signifies to dip or immerse, but it never has any other meaning. Each of these words has its specific province into which the other cannot enter, while there is a common province in which either of them may serve. Either of them may signify to dip generally, but the primitive cannot specifically express that ordinance to which the derivative has been appropriated, and the derivative cannot signify to die, which is a part of the province of the primitive. The difference is precise and important. While we think it likely that Dr. Carson's language is rather strong in some respects, he shows most conclusively that baptizo cannot mean to die. Indeed, we have no faith in the transmission of secondary or metonymical meanings from primitive to derivative words. They inherit the primary but not foreign meanings of the words from which they came. But as Dr. Carson was an immersionist, it may be well to hear from those who practiced effusion and aspersion. Dr. Moses Stewart says, I have already intimated that baptizo is distinguished from bapto in its meaning. I now add that it is not, like the latter word, used to designate the idea of coloring or dyeing. While in some other respects it means in classical usage to be nearly or quite synonymous with bapto. In the New Testament, however, there is one other marked distinction between the use of these verbs. Baptizo and its derivatives are exclusively employed when the rite of baptism is to be designated in any form whatever, and in this case bapto seems to be purposely as well as habitually excluded. Here we have a confirmation of Dr. Carson's statement by one whose authority will not be questioned by those who oppose us. If these authors are worthy of credit, baptizo does not mean to die. But suppose that in this they are mistaken, as immersion is admitted by all to be the primary meaning of the word representing baptism, we wish to know why it is to give place to figurative or metonymical meanings such as wash, wet, stain, dye, etc. All philological laws require preference to be given to the primary meaning of words unless good reason be shown for its removal. We submit the following rules for the use and interpretation of words arranged by Moses Stewart of Andover, aided by Edward Robinson, author of Robinson's Greek Lexicon, Robinson's Gnesius' Hebrew Lexicon, etc. 1. To every word in Scripture there is unquestionably assigned some idea or notion, otherwise words are useless and have no more signification than the inarticulate sounds of animals. Ernesti, page 7. 2. The literal meaning of words is the sense that is so connected with them as to be spontaneously presented to the mind as soon as the sound of the word is heard, and that is first in order. The literal sense does not differ from the sense of the letter. Ibid. Ernesti, page 7. 3. A particular meaning being attached to a word can no more be changed or denied than any historical event whatever. All men in their daily conversation and writings attach but one sense to a word, at the same time and in the same passage, unless they design to speak in enigmas. The sense of a word cannot be diverse or multifarious at the same time and in the same passage or expression. Ibid. Ernesti, page 9. 4. There can be no certainty at all in respect to the interpretation of any passage unless a kind of necessity compels us to affix a particular sense to a word, which sense must be one, and unless there are special reasons for a tropical meaning, it must be literal. Ernesti, page 10. 5. The sense of words depends upon the usus loquendi. Ernesti, page 13. 6. Words are proper and tropical, literal and figurative. First, a proper or literal word is a definite name given to a certain thing. Originally, words were undoubtedly used in their proper and literal sense. Second, tropes or metaphorical words are called by Aristotle strangers, foreigners. Ernesti, page 21. 7. In no language can a word have more than one literal meaning in the same place. Ernesti. By these rules we see that a word can have but one meaning at the same time and in the same place, and that the primary meaning must be given to words unless there be special reasons for its removal. These rules come to us from the very foundation of authority in America, and have existence in the nature of all language. Having thus found that the primary meaning of baptizo is to dip or immerse, dare we set it aside and adopt a metonymical, metaphorical, or figurative meaning for no better reason than to save a favorite theory, or to avoid going into the water where the Lord commanded us to go? In the Septuagint Greek of the Old Testament, we have baptizo as a translation of the Hebrew word taval, which modern theologians insist means sprinkle or pour. Although this word is never employed to indicate baptism, as baptizo wants a translation of it, it may be well for us to examine it briefly. In the Hebrew Bible, it is used 14 times and is rendered by King James translators dip every time. Hence, we have the unanimous testimony of the 47 distinguished scholars employed by him in the translation of the Hebrew Bible that this is the meaning of the word. The following are the connections in which it occurs. Genesis 37 and verse 31. And they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in blood. Exodus 12:22. And ye shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin. Leviticus 4 and verse 6. And the priest shall dip his finger in the blood. Chapter 9 and verse 9. And the sons of Aaron brought the blood unto him, and he dipped his finger in the blood. Chapter 14 and verse 6. And shall dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed. Verse 16. And the priest shall dip his finger in the oil. Verse 51. And he shall take the cedar wood and the hyssop and the scarlet and the living bird and dip them in the blood of the slain bird and in the running water. Numbers 19 and verse 18. And a clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in water. Deuteronomy 33:24. Let him dip his foot in oil. Joshua 3 and verse 14. The feet of the priests that bear the ark were dipped in the brim of the water. Ruth chapter 2 and verse 14. And dip thy morsel in the vinegar. 1 Samuel chapter 14 verse 27. Wherefore he put forth the end of the rod that was in his hand and dipped it in an honeycomb. 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 14. And dipped himself seven times in Jordan. Chapter 8 and verse 15. He took a thick cloth and dipped it in water. In Leviticus 9 and verse 9, we have dipped and poured in the same verse. Dipped is from taval, but poured is not. In Leviticus 14, we have dip and sprinkle in the same verse. Dip is from taval, sprinkle is not. Why is this? If taval means to sprinkle and pour, why was it not used to express sprinkling and pouring even when it was employed in the same verse? We have four Hebrew lexicons by us as we write, which define the word as follows. Taval, to dip in, to immerse, to dip or immerse oneself. For example, 2 Kings 5 verse 14. He went down and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan. Robinson's Gnesius's Hebrew Lexicon, page 364. Taval, 1. To dip, immerse, plunge. 2. To tinge or dye with a certain color, which is usually performed by dipping. Parkhurst, page 255. Taval, 1. He dipped. 2. He was dipped. Robertson's Hebrew Dictionary by Joseph, page 111. Taval, dip. Dip in, immerse, submerge. Stokius, Vetus Testamentum, that is, Old Testament, Volume 1, page 421. Taval, Merge, Immerse. M. Stewart, Christian Baptism, page 119. Schleusner, incidentally, defines Taval in his definition of baptizo thus: to immerse, dip, plunge into water, from bapto, and corresponds to the Hebrew Taval. Besides these, we have in other works the following definitions of Taval, namely, 1 by Davidson, Taval, 1, to dip, to immerse, 2, to stain. 2, Buxdorf, Taval, to dip into, to submerge, to immerse. 3, Dr. Kleeberg, a celebrated Jewish rabbi of Louisville, Kentucky, answered certain interrogatories propounded to him thus. 1. What does Taval mean? It means to immerse, to dip. 2. Does it ever mean to sprinkle or pour? It never means to sprinkle or pour. 3. Did the Hebrews always immerse their proselytes? They did. The whole body was entirely submerged. 4. Were the Jewish ablutions immersions? Before eating and prayer and after rising in the morning, they washed. When they have become unclean, they must immerse. Louisville Debate, page 652. Thus we see that these authors concur in giving the import of Taval to dip or immerse. Hence, as far as it throws any light upon baptizo, it certainly does not give any support to sprinkling or pouring.